It's the Escape Artist Podcast at DonkeyJawProjects.com, hosted by yours truly, Marshall Couture, also known as Black.
We make, relate, create, it's change harness. The soul within the comics and movies that they market. Activating people's imaginations, the target. Work the hardest, with passion and heart, it's Escape Artist.
What's up, everybody? This is Plex, and you're listening to the Escape Artist Podcast. How you doing? I'm doing all right. How'd you like the intro? The new, brand new intro and outro was debuted in the last podcast. I didn't mention it because I didn't even think about recording it and doing it until after I had already recorded that podcast. But, you know, one night I was getting the podcast ready and I had a little time and I was like, you know what, I've been wanting to do a new intro, something that, you know, sounds a lot better than just the little beat I had in the front there. So I did it. And, you know, it was fun to do. Really kind of cool to have the opportunity to use a little bit of my other, you know, skills, which is the hip-hop stuff, to kind of, I don't know. A lot of times, you know, I just make my music and stuff, and it's really fun and whatnot. But it doesn't really merge well sometimes with the art. Like, you know, it's almost like I have two different, like, personas or something, or lives or something. My artist life or whatever, and then my musician life. So I don't know. It was kind of cool. It was like taking a tool out of the toolbox and just being able to use it in a way I was kind of surprised to use it with. And I think it came out kind of cool. So let me know what you think. It's definitely fun to make. But other than that, let's see. I guess we'll start with some news. I do have a topic for today that I think is going to be interesting. But the news, I don't know, let's see. A lot has gone on. I didn't put out a podcast last week, and hopefully, I'm recording this on Wednesday, the week after, and hopefully I'll be able to get this up before the end of the week so that I only missed 1 week. But, you know, I did say from the beginning of this relaunch that, you know, I'm shooting for once a week, but, you know, or not that I'm shooting for that, but, you know, I don't have a set schedule, but once a week would be something I'd really like to achieve. And that's still the case, and it will continue to be the case. I think that's kind of the best schedule for a podcast. I mean, there's other ways people do it, and that's fine too. Some people just put them out randomly and they get like 5 or 6 out a year, and you know, it all depends. Like, I know of one that's kind of like that, but it's so robust and it's so well put together and recorded with like all kinds of different sound effects and voices and, you know, interviews and things like that. It's like a really well produced show. So, you know, for somebody who's not probably making much money off of the podcast and who has other work to do, to put something like that together, I can understand that it's only going to come out a few times a year, but when it does come out, it's like kind of epic, you know, and it's super entertaining and super informative and helpful. So, you know, some of you people who are listening probably can guess which one I'm talking about, but I don't, you know, I'm not trying to be, you know, there's a little tiny, I guess, bit of negative thing on there that it doesn't come out weekly or whatever, and I'm not trying to criticize at all, but it might come off that way, and so, but yeah, anyways, so yeah, that's what's up with my podcast. Yeah, like I said, I do like the idea of a podcast that comes out once a week. I know of one podcast, it's interesting, that comes out twice a week. And it's a great podcast, but I never, you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts, so to get to their podcast twice a week is a little rough for me, you know. So I end up getting, you know, a few of their podcasts in a month. Sometimes I'll listen to a few in a row or whatnot, but, you know, I don't hold myself to strictly making sure I listen to every single podcast because, you know, I only have so much time. And then another one that I really like comes out once every other week. And that's a cool schedule too, I think. But I think the ideal schedule, in my opinion, at least for this one, is I'd love to get to do this once a week. And maybe more than once a week on special occasions. But yeah, so that's how that goes. I guess that's kind of a good segue to talk about something else that I want, a new app I just found, actually just last night. It's called SoundGecko. It's an app, and I'm not sure if it's on Android or not, but it's definitely on the iPhone, and really cool. And there's another one too called Lyft. There's a bunch of them. You know, I followed this one guy at Passive Income, smartpassiveincome.com, Pat Flynn. He talks a lot about different business and marketing stuff, but a lot mostly about building, like, niche websites and stuff, which I'm not 100%, you know, I'm not into, like, the SEO stuff too much. And the niche website, but he goes way beyond that with his podcasts and stuff, usually, and he's got a really cool presentation, a humble dude. I definitely enjoy listening to his stuff, but he just put out a blog, and it was like the top 10, like his top 10 favorite apps that he has on his phone right now, and I downloaded like about 5 of them. Some of them may or may not really apply so much. So the ones that didn't, I didn't download, obviously. But then there's some that I may or may not use. I don't know, but it seemed like it might come in handy. But the two that I played with just a little bit so far, because it was only last night that I downloaded them, was SoundGecko and Lyft. And really cool apps. Mostly I just want to talk about SoundGecko, but just briefly, Lyft is like a habit forming, like a good habit forming app, and it's like another social media type of app where there's like a community and you can share your progress and stuff, and people can, I think they can comment. I literally just started and I haven't even, you know, done the thing I'm supposed to do yet for it. But there is, basically you put it, like my first habit thing that I wanted to do was to draw every day. Because I've kind of gone in and out with that and sometimes done it, sometimes not. Right now I'm kind of on a slant of not doing it, but I want to get back to it. So, you know, I want that to become a habit that I literally, like, I want to be the type of person who, like, first instinct when I have any little time is to just start sketching, which is tough now with the iPhone and stuff because there's so many things you feel like, oh, you know, I could, you know, I use the iPhone for a lot of like tasks that are actually kind of important, you know, and also the social media thing, and and sometimes it's hard to tell what's, you know, when that is a good thing to do and when I'm wasting time. You know, and I wish that more of those times when I had a little spot here or there was me just sitting down and drawing. I need to learn to draw so much more better. You know, that's one thing that I definitely realize every time I make a comic, you know, I just feel so almost like not ready because I have, there's so many things I have not practiced and learned how to draw yet. And even just the human figure is still rough for me. But, you know, I'm not letting that stop me. I'm going to try to just keep making comics. And hopefully that will be the one of the things that helps me to learn how to draw all these awesome, all these things and stuff much better. I just went to a comic convention and I was looking at people's, you know, pages that they drew, and it's just like, oh man, I'm so far away from that. And these are even just like indie people and whatnot, you know, but, you know, I'm trying not to fall into that trap of comparing myself to the point of despair. So I'm trying to let it drive me to work harder and work better. So we'll get more, a little more into that with the main topic. But so the one app I did want to talk about even more, though, was this SoundGecko one. And what that is speaking of, like, not having time for podcasts and all that, I say that relatively, like, because there's, like I said, a lot of podcasts I like to listen to, and then sometimes I just, you know, I have time to listen, but I can't really, like, sometimes my mind is too busy or something, or I'm in kind of a creative zone or something, and, you know, a lot of times I'll either just not listen to anything, or I will put on some music or whatever. And so sometimes I'll just spend a lot more time doing that than listening to podcasts. But this SoundGecko app is pretty cool, because the thing that is awesome about audio is I also listen to a lot of audiobooks. And the thing is I don't have time to sit down and read a book. I just don't. When I have time, I have to do stuff around the house, or I'm spending time with my wife. And, you know, when I'm doing that, even when I'm hanging out with my wife, you know, we might be watching TV or something, that's when I get time to, like, do some drawing while we're watching TV or something like that. So every little inch of my life is usually pretty much filled up with things that I feel are, you know, important. But so reading a book, it's really tough. I really don't have time to sit there and read a book. I used to read books in the past more, but, you know, I think that was mostly before I was married and stuff like that. And then even when I was married, once in a great while, but it would be like me, you know, every time I sit down and go to the bathroom or something, I'd pick it up and read it a little bit, or, you know, I fit it into little spots where I have time, but it's a struggle. Like, to read the amount of books I would like to read, I'd never get to even a small amount of what I would love to read. So, you know, I do have an Audible account. Really love that site. I mean, that to me is my education. You know, I use that as, that and podcast as, you know, my pseudo education, because I don't have the time and I can't afford, you know, to go to school. So, but sometimes I run into situations where a book I really want to read is not, they don't have an audio version. Also, blogs, you know, I come across a lot of blogs that I think would be interesting to read, but I do get to some of them, but it's always a struggle, and I always feel like I'm sacrificing something to sit here and read this blog. So, you know, that's a little tough. So what this app does, the SoundGecko app, is you can, anything that has like a website link, like that's a blog or something, or news or whatever you want to read, you can send the link to this app, and it takes like a couple minutes, but it will let you know when it's done through email or through the app, and it makes a audio version of whatever you want to read. It does have to be like on the web, so if it's like a book or something, there's limits. Like, I actually went for the paid version, which is like $3, because, you know, that's obviously a lot less limits and stuff like that. But like, for one thing, I have the script for the second book for Travelers, which is the one I told you guys about, the comic I'm doing with my buddy Liris, and he, you know, keeps sending it to me and like sending revisions, and every time he sends it, you know, it's a full, kind of a full script, you know, it's probably, I don't know, 5-6 pages long, maybe a little more. And, you know, like I said, I don't have a lot of time to read, so, you know, it's tough to, every time he makes revisions, I have to reread it, which is fine, and was working fine for the first issue, but now I'm trying to do the art and, you know, look at these revisions, because it's a collaborative effort, and, you know, it takes time, it takes time when... Usually I'm kind of distracted when I'm reading. Like, I might try to read it while I'm, like, watching a TV show that maybe I've already seen or something. But, you know, I do that because I'm hanging out with my wife or my, you know, my wife and her sister or something like that. And it's hard to read and be distracted and really get it. So, but I do have, like I said, a lot of time to listen to stuff. You know, so I... This app is really useful for that, you know. So that script, now that's not necessarily on a website. So what I had to do was create a specific, like a little page on my own website that's like private that nobody can really see. And then I linked that, you know, and I put all the text in there. And then I linked that to the app. And now, you know, I'm at work and I'll be able to listen to it or something while I'm driving or whatnot. And so I did that, and it worked great. One thing I will say is, you know, the audio isn't, like, perfect. It's, you know, there's some weird things. Like, every time it said who, it said W-H-O. I don't know why it doesn't know the word who. But, so there was that. And then, like, I don't know, it's kind of choppy because it's not like a real human. I mean, it's a human, but it's like made up of samples, and if they don't know the word, they'll kind of sound it out. And so it's not the most beautiful audio you could hear, but, you know, it does the trick. You get the point, and it's a lot more efficient for me personally. So I'm really excited about this app. It's going to, I mean, there's, like I said, there's a lot of blogs sometimes I want to read and then I just don't have a chance to. Sometimes there's blogs I want to read and reread. I use for reference for the podcast or something like that. And, you know, I don't, like I said, I only have so much time to sit there and read anything. So, really cool app, SoundGecko. I'll link to it in the show notes. And I'll try to, hopefully I remember to link to that Smart Passive Income blog article too that has all the different apps. You know, you might find some that are helpful for you that I didn't mention. There's really good ones in there. So there's that. The other news, I just my buddies Will McKenzie, who's been on the show before, he is here hanging out with me. From he lives in Long Island, but he comes to visit once in a while, and he's here right now. And last weekend we went to Hartford Comic Con. It was the first time this con has happened, and it's really cool. We really enjoyed ourselves. We went on Saturday, and you know, I just went to walk around, you know, this time, even though the tables were actually pretty cheap. I just decided to go for the purpose of walking around. Sometimes I get more out of that. First of all, I was interested in, you know, finding as many, you know, Kirby books as I could for really cheap, which has been, I've been, like, running around fiendishly looking for, for the last few months, and I've got a pretty nice sized collection right now, and I'm still trying to fill a lot of gaps. Kirby did so much, it's going to take forever, and I probably will never be able to collect all of them, especially like the Fantastic Four issues he did, because those are really expensive. Because they are pretty much what launched Marvel's superhero phenomenon, was Fantastic Four. Obviously, Captain America came years and years before, but other than that and a few small, like Submariner and the Torch and stuff like that, other than those, you know, guys, most of the superheroes that we really cling to and know about came with Fantastic Four and afterwards, and they were created mostly by Kirby, the predominant ones that we know, but you guys already know that stuff probably. The point was that Fantastic Fours are going to be tough to get all of them. I mean, especially obviously the first one is ridiculous and impossible, so I'll have to find reprints and stuff for a lot of those, but you know, hopefully I'll be able to get my hands on some of them. I actually popped my Fantastic Four cherry with this con. I don't know, I like that phrase, like, works, but it's kind of pretty crude. But anyways, so I got actually Fantastic Four 79, awesome cover, big splash drawing of the Thing with like an awesome background. Ah, man, I love it. I love it. Just the cover specifically is amazing, but obviously the interiors are awesome too. But yeah, really amped. I got my first Fantastic Four. Got a bunch of Demon comics, his character Demon, some Eternals that I didn't have. You know, a few other little things off, a couple Forever People, which are also a little hard to get, a little expensive sometimes, but I was able to get all these things for a really cheap price. So that was really cool. And then Will hooked me up with a Silver Star, like, it's like a collection of all the issues, but it's like those big artist edition things that they've been... IDW's been making, where they show like the full-on like big actual page in the same size with all the like little like white out marks and whatnot, corrections and all that. They have that with IDW, but those are like $100 a piece. But my buddy saw this little like Silver Star one is like a trade paperback size thing, and it's cool because it's like the regular pages, but black and white. But then they have some of those like penciled pages too there for you to check out. So it's really cool to see penciled pages of Kirby. And it was only $5 and he hooked me up with it. And that was really cool of him to do, for sure. So I got a lot of cool stuff. I also spent a lot of time talking to indie artists and stuff, and I actually got to meet Jim Mahfood for the first time, which I'm a huge fan of his, and you know, I finally got his comic. I want to say it's like Howard, I don't know what's it, I can't remember exactly, it's like something the cat who makes peanut butter and jelly sandwiches is the title of it. It's like, you know, his own independently created book that he independently published, and I've been wanting to get it for a while, and I really wanted to get it as well, because a lot of times Jim Mahfood's stuff, you know, it's kind of underground, and sometimes it's a lot of talking heads, which it's all good, it's all awesome, but this one is cool because it's like, you know, almost like an action comic story. And it's also fully colored, which a lot of times Jim Mahfood's stuff isn't colored when it comes to the comics. So that, I really wanted to get that. Plus, it's his own original independent thing. And I can't wait to read it. Looks like a fun little story. This is definitely explicit material if you're interested in getting it, you know, just so you know. And then also, he, you know, I got, he got to sign it, and I got to meet him and talk to him. Me and him actually have a lot of connections. He came, he grew up in St. Louis, and I happen to know a lot of people from St. Louis, a lot of hip-hop guys, and he's into the hip-hop scene, and like people who he's done album covers for, I've done like beats for and things like that. And really, really a lot, there's that, those connections. And then like I'm also working with Philip Victor, who he did a cover for, and there's just different, a lot of different other connections that are really cool. And so it was cool to talk to him, and you know, he was a really awesome guy, super, you know, approachable. I was actually nervous to talk to him because before that I hadn't talked to any artists during this specific con. So sometimes it takes a few for me to get like to practice and get, you know, comfortable, because I'm a, typically a kind of a shy guy. But once I get on a roll, I'll talk to everybody and anybody, because I'm talking about stuff I love, you know, the comics and the art and stuff. So so that, you know, I was a little nervous to talk to him because I hadn't talked to anybody yet. And then we ended up talking about Kirby, because he's going to be working on a special project that there's a bunch of different artists and writers working on. It's going to be like a like a new version or whatever. I don't know if it's a new version or just new stories for Captain Victory, which was one of Kirby's books that he did for PC Comics, Pacific Comics or something like that. He did Silver Star, the one I was just talking about, and also Captain Victory. So, you know, Jim Mahfoud's going to be involved in that. And so I was telling him about the deals I was getting on some Kirby books, and he was like, oh man, where'd you get those? And stuff like that. So that was kind of cool, because he's so such a huge fan, and obviously I am too. So we got to talk, geek out on Kirby a little bit. And then, you know, like I said, I talked to a bunch of artists, other artists there, and it was really fun. And I have to go, still have to go, it's Wednesday, and I still have to go through all my little business cards and stuff that I got. And, you know, I like to try to follow up with people, especially if there's specific things, you know. I also got to talk to a lot of artists that I already have met a few times at different cons, and it's cool to keep solidifying those relationships, and, you know, it's just awesome, you know. And then also this guy, Matt Ryan, he's kind of like, a lot of you guys know about Jersey Droz and stuff. He's kind of like the Jersey Droz of, like, Northern Connecticut area. He does a lot of, like, workshops and stuff and on comics, and he's an awesome guy. He makes his own comics as well, and he works in illustration, and he, you know, makes a living off of, you know, all those little aspects. And so that was really cool to connect to him. And he also has a lot of events. Like, he has like his own like studio, and he has like events for kids a lot of times, but also for adults. And on Monday night they have like a whole kind of like a drink and draw type of thing at his studio. And it's, you know, it's crazy. I live like literally 15 minutes away, and I've never gone, and they've had it for, I don't know, I think he's been doing this for like 10 years or something crazy. He's been doing it for a long time, and I've just never gone. I've always wanted to go, but, you know, nighttime's for me, or that's the time I spend with my wife, so it's kind of hard to to take time out sometimes. But, you know, I was with Will hanging out, and I thought, you know, this is a good opportunity to do this. You know, me and Will can go and have some fun and hang out, do some drawings and whatnot. And so we did that, and it was awesome, you know. Great time, got to connect with some local artists and stuff, and got to do some drawings and whatnot. So that was fun, and I'm hoping to get over there more often, because it's just an opportunity that is, you know, it really something I shouldn't really be missing out on. And I want to get involved with the stuff he's doing and stuff. You know, it's just good to be part of the scene, you know. So I'm trying to do that. And so yeah, really cool convention. Had a lot of fun. A lot of people were there for a first convention. It was, you know, a lot of people, I guess, showed up. And you know, it was pretty crowded. A lot of cosplayers, A lot of vendors. Really cool. So I think it's definitely going to... I hope and think it's going to definitely continue next year. Because I don't know. We have a lot of conventions now. It's kind of crazy. In Connecticut, we have tons of conventions all of a sudden. So it's cool. But there's like one that's kind of big. But it kind of sucks. I heard that, you know, people who table there, they don't really treat them good. And it's more for gaming a lot of times than comics. And it's kind of not so great. I've been there, I think, a couple times I attended. But I never tabled there. But, you know, it was really... So it's cool that we have it, though, you know. And maybe it'll improve on some of the things. But there's also another one that's really good, and it's expanding this year to 3 days. And that's down in southern Connecticut. And, you know, it's always rough for me to get to that one because it's kind of far away. It's like an hour away. And it always falls on the day of my nephew's birthday party, too. So that's another thing that's kind of rough. But I'm going to try to at least make it there for one day. Usually it's just a one-day event. Now it's 3 days, so maybe I can make it there for a day that's not the birthday party day. So we shall see. But, yeah, that's a really good one. It's been growing and growing, and there's nothing but awesome things people say about it. The tables are getting a little up there in cost to table, but eventually I'm probably going to have to go and table there because it's just too awesome. But it costs money. But yeah, so that was kind of my, I guess my news. I also, another thing I've told a lot of people this too is, I finally drew and roughed out my first ever full-size comic page for an actual comic. Like, because I used to mess around with it when I was younger and stuff and try to draw them, but it wasn't even for anything. Like, I just wanted to make a comic page. So I kind of did that when I was younger, but... and it was, like, random characters that I made up on the spot and stuff. But yeah, so this is, like, the first time, like, doing something I've dreamed about doing for my whole life. You know, I mean, I've done the mini comics, really cool, but, you know, the full-size comic is, you know, where the dream started, you know. So, I'm really excited about that. I did get a little progress on a second page, but, you know, long road ahead, but I'm looking forward to really bunkering down and focusing on this. And comics are the main thing right now, and I think I had mentioned that in the last podcast as well, so I'm going to be focusing. Focus, because I'm not good at focusing, but I'm going to be trying to focus. So, yeah, that's the main part of the news. I'm sure there's other things, but, you know, I don't want to go into, like, ad nauseum about my life. So, those are the highlights. So, yeah, we'll kick into topic here in a minute. I'm going to pause it first. All right, so the topic that I want to talk about today, I haven't come up with a snappy title yet, but be sure by the time you listen to this, there will be a snazzy title on the podcast. But yeah, so basically the idea, though, that I'm thinking about and is money. And, you know, I apologize that I kind of beat on the same drum sometimes with this podcast. But I think I varied the topics pretty decently. I actually went through when I was reloading all the podcasts into the new feed that I have going. I actually, you know, seeing all the titles, it got me interested to maybe see what I was thinking, you know, when I was recording the other stuff. And so I listened to a bunch of the podcasts. And, you know, I do have a lot of varied topics, but sometimes I feel like when I'm talking, I'm kind of beating on the same drum a lot of times. But, you know, I guess it'll grow and evolve naturally as it goes. And I think that's the nature of some podcasts anyways. You know, I know Jersey and Rob Stenzinger have been lately talking about, especially Jersey has been talking a lot lately about how he, you know, was really used to be beating on the whole drum of, you know, not liking gurus and stuff, and they stopped using the term self-helpy tips, which I kind of really liked, our stupid self-helpy tips, which I love that term, actually. I think it's a fun, quirky thing that they say, you know, but, you know, they've made the decision to not use that anymore, but that's fine. You know, the whole point is that, like, he was talking about, like, gurus and stuff a lot in the earlier podcasts, and I think that's kind of the nature of these things, you know. Sometimes you kind of have to keep beating on the same drum until you get you figure out where you're at with it or whatever. So, you know, yeah, I'm talking kind of about money today and some new interesting perspectives on it that I've partially had, but have also been evolving, and maybe a bit of an epiphany yesterday with the reading/listening of one of the newer books I just grabbed from Audible, and that book being actually a pretty big classic that a lot of people have read, which is The War of Art. Nope, not The Art of War, but The War of Art. Can't think of his name at the moment, but let me see if I can pull it up real quick. Hopefully this won't mess things up. Stephen Pressfield. So, yeah, really good book. A little weird in some ways. He's mainly a fiction writer. So this is more of like a nonfiction book about what it's like to be an artist of any kind. He's a writer, so that's his art. But, you know, and it talks a lot about if you haven't read it, it talks a lot about the struggles we have as an artist and getting things done, procrastination, and it talks a lot about inspiration, muse, just really interesting stuff, the way he goes about it. It's a lot of kind of psychological type of things, thoughts on that, you know, the artist's mindset and stuff like that. Very interesting. Some things people might not love because he kind of talks about like the way he talks about it. He talks about like spirits and angels and evil, and I don't know, like, but he does kind of acknowledge that they're kind of metaphors, and he does acknowledge the whole subconscious thing, and that, you know, he basically says however you look at it, but he just kind of, he thinks of it more as like angels and stuff, I don't know, and like muses, and not necessarily the way I even think about it, because I do obviously believe in spiritual stuff too. If you listen to the podcast, you know that. But, you know, I think a little bit differently than some of the things he's saying. But the point is there, and it's very clear. It's something I think anybody can listen to. You just got to, if you don't believe in that stuff, you can catch the concepts. He just puts his certain label sort of on it, you know. But the concept is still there and still true, whether you think it's think of it as the subconscious or a spiritual realm or whatever. So it's still there. It's still very true stuff that I'm sure if you've ever tried to do anything of any kind of creative, in any kind of creative vein, then you will recognize these things as struggles that you also have a hard time with. So it's all about, you know, kind of the struggle and how to overcome it, you know, and And really interesting, like I said. There's actually a few things that really got me, like, amped up and interested, but there's one specific thing that was kind of maybe the biggest thing. I haven't finished reading it, but I'm almost done. But I kind of wanted to stop listening to that and record this because I had thoughts on it. But one of the big things that really hit me was he started talking about, and I'm going to be kind of putting it in my own way, but he talked about, like, becoming a professional and not, and like, the differences between being an amateur and a professional. And one thing he was talking about was, like, the professional focuses on money, sort of. I mean, the love of the art is always there. Like, that's what I keep saying, you know. Let's let that be. We already know that. We know we do it for the love, you know. We're not, even if we're doing things for the money, we're still doing it for the love. And I've talked about these kind of concepts before. But the problem is, and this is another podcast I had, was, are we too close to our art? And, you know, I think we are. And, you know, I went into much more depth just kind of talking about my thoughts in that specific podcast. And I'll try to remember to throw a link in the show notes for that. But, you know, I think we are too close to our art. We're too intimate with it. We're too tied to it. Like, when we put out a piece, you know, whether we're a worthless human being or, like, the best person in the world depends on what people think or say about the art we did or whatever. Like, there's a lot riding on the art we do sometimes, like, in our emotional state. And it shouldn't really be like that. Like, that, I shouldn't say it shouldn't be like that, but what I mean is that hinders us, you know. It makes it very difficult to be an artist, and it causes friction that sometimes paralyzes us, a lot of times paralyzes us. I struggle with that. I mean, I'm too precious with my work just to start off, but secondly, you know, I'm afraid, you know, there's fears, you know, that people won't like it, or that I'm kind of a hack at this, you know. You know, I always hear a lot of people, artists on podcasts, talk about that type of feeling, and we struggle with this. Anytime you go and try to do anything creative, you're going to struggle with this. Even the people who are pros admit, you know, that they still, you know, at least to some degree, still pretty much struggle with those same things. Still, they, even when they get to a point where their art is obviously amazing, and they even have acclaim from friends and from, you know, an audience, they start to build an audience who like their stuff, they still feel like they're kind of a hack, you know, because there's always so much better you can get, you know, there's always something new you can add and refine and stuff like that. You're never going to get to perfection. So everybody struggles with it. But one of, almost like a strategy, and this is, it's so weird because there's such a stigma, especially in the art community, about money. But one of the strategies is to kind of do it for the money. But you really are doing it for the love. You'll never really stop. You wouldn't do it in the first place if you didn't do it for the love. But if you start to focus a little more on the money aspect, then you start to do it more like you would do it as a job, and you start to be more productive and more professional with it, and a little less, your soul, if I can use that term, your soul is less tied to it. So if somebody says your stuff is not so great, then who cares? It doesn't really matter. Even if the project does well, or if it fails, it really doesn't matter, because you love doing the art, you love doing the project, you're just doing it, and you're being a professional, and some stuff will float and some stuff will sink, you know? And it really doesn't affect you as much when you're focusing, when you become a professional, I should say. But focusing on the money is kind of a strategy for that. And, you know, just thinking about money, and I kind of jumped the gun here because I kind of wanted to get into this other part of it first, but basically our thoughts on money, I think in general, even just as a population, a lot of people have a lot of different feelings on money, and I think a lot of times it gets kind of distorted, you know. We tend to either over-glorify it and fantasize about it, or we think it's the most evil thing that's ever been invented, and it's the corruption of the world. And people also aren't 100% that extreme about it sometimes too, but I think that those extremes are both errors. I'm gonna pause it again. So yeah, there's those two extremes that people tend to go with, and I think, you know, well, as far as the evil one goes, the evil extreme goes, I think the kind of basis for that is, you know, that very popular phrase, money is the root of all evil, which, you know, is from, I mean, I've seen it mostly from, you know, the Bible. It says something similar to that, but that's, I mean, if its main source is from the Bible, which I think it is, they're misquoting it, because, and even Christians misquote it, because it's such a prevalent phrase that, you know, you just kind of take it for granted that, oh, well, money is the root of all evil. It's just what people say. But, in the Bible, it actually says the love of money is the root of all types of evil, which seems like the same thing, but if you really break it down, it's very different. It's not money. Money is not evil. Money is just a tool. If I'm going to break down the scripture is the love of money. It's what's in people's hearts, you know, that is what is the root of all evil, because it's not even the root of all evil, it's the root of all kinds of evil. So it's not the only thing that, you know, makes evil happen. But, the love of money is, you know, it's that greed that people get, you know, so attached to money, and they care more about that than they care about the real, good, the most important things in life. And, you know, that's what's really the root of all evil. But money is a tool for good or evil, you know, or for whatever, you know. All it is a tool. There's no good or evil about it. The whole idea of money is really just a smarter way of the bartering system. That's all it really is. It's more efficient. You get to a point in a tribe or whatever where, you know, you're trading back and forth with people, and, you know, you get to a point where it's like, okay, well, I really need, you know, a chair for my house. I don't know. I need a chair for my house, but I make, you know, I'm a farmer. So what am I going to do during the winter months? I really need like a crib for my baby or something. How am I going to get that in the winter months when, you know, we're pretty much just trying to survive on the food we have, but we're not creating any more food, you know? I can't get, you know, a crib for my baby that I just had, you know, until the summer. Like, how is that going to work out? Or until the harvest, actually, yeah. So, like, what am I going to do, you know? So, they started using money. They used coins and whatever they had used for currency. You know, different cultures have come up with different things at different times. And, you know, so it's a promise. It's a value thing, you know. It's basically, you know, okay, I'm going to give you this note, so then, you know, when it does come time to get the harvest, you can give me back a note that you've gotten and get, you know, some food. But for now, I need a crib, you know, so I'm giving you these promissory notes for that. You know, something kind of along those lines. I'm sure it goes more in depth, but that's like the basic idea of what money is, you know. And money is also created. That's another thing. You know, people think that, and it's not created by the government. I mean, it is, but it isn't. You know, now it's become such a kind of a little bit of a different beast, you know, because of politics and whatnot. And, you know, the country can just print money even though we're in debt and stuff like that. And, you know, I don't want to get into all that, but the basic idea of money, you know, it's something you can create. You know, you create value. I don't know. It's hard to, that part's, I'm still wrapping my head around. But I'm getting closer and closer to understanding how that works. But basically, a lot of people think, you know, you can't help but think that there's only so much money and there's only so much success to be passed around. But it's not really like that. That's the scarcity mentality. And I think we all fall victim to that from time to time. And some of us have never thought that there's any other way than the fact that things are scarce. And there's only so many resources that the whole world can pull from. But things regenerate. Things get created. There's enough to go around, and it's just going to keep increasing as we, you know, when, you know, say, you know, comics are doing horribly or whatever, well, or independent comics are doing really horribly, well, the fact that one person becomes a success doesn't make that mean there's, okay, now that that person is having a huge success, there's less success to be had now from other people because they've taken up such a large portion of that success that you can possibly get from, you know, the communal pool of success. No, that's not what happens. What happens is because they have such a big success, that increases the range of people who can have success. You know, it's kind of like a beacon of light. Like, look, here's a cool thing. It's called independent comics. It's so awesome. Get into it. You know, and a few more people get into it. And then, you know, and it just increases and increases. And then you get also the phenomenon where, you know, it gets so big to a point where they call it the bubble bursting, which is basically people are like, okay, we've had enough of this, or we need to go in a little bit different direction because we're bored with this, or something like that, you know. And it just happens that a lot of people think that at the same time, and then, you know, it kind of messes up one industry. But that's why change, you know, you have to be adaptable, you have to be down for change. You can't be a traditionalist and a purist. If you do, I think you're going to get stuck. You know, I think there's a certain amount of that. You know, you have to have respect for the tradition and respect for, you know, the pure art form. But I think you should always be okay to embrace change and push forward and progress, you know, in all aspects of life, really. But even in creative pursuits, you know, just because, you know, comics have been printed in four colors, you know, or whatever, like, for years and years and years, doesn't mean that we can't, okay, all of a sudden start printing them in a more magazine type with more cooler colors, because now we have the technology to do so much easier and to print them easier, and it's not as expensive. So, you know, are we going to stay with the old format just because that's the tradition? No. We'll push forward, but still respect the old tradition and still enjoy it, you know, as a novelty, and things like that. And also, you know, just novelty sounds kind of hokey dokey, but But like I said, respect it, you know, and always go back and study that stuff. But, you know, now we're into some better printing. Oh, well, okay, we got into amazing printing and all that, and now that's the standard. But, uh-oh, digital comes along, you know, and now we're not even printing things anymore. People aren't even buying things. They're just downloading them and this and that. Well, if these big companies don't get hip with that, and which they have, you know, they've actually learned from the music industry a little bit better, to do it a little bit better, but still, you know, that's why the indies are having a little bit more of a opportunity now. I mean, it's like back and forth because now everybody wants to do it, but, you know, they have opportunity because they can now produce something and get it into more, have more people read it for cheaper or whatever. You know, there's a lot of different strategies. But, you know, you have to embrace digital now or else you're going to be left in the dust, you know. I mean, it may get to the point where digital is the 90% of how people read comics, and the print goes the way of, you know, the 8-track or something like that, you know. But people will still always collect 8-tracks, you know, and there will always be, like, I think there will always be a place for print specifically, because people do like a hard copy. Some people do. Like, I prefer the print copy. I won't usually read stuff unless it's print. And big part of that is because I don't have an iPad. If I had an iPad, well, I don't know. I guess I don't need to get into all that. But basically, I would go with the digital a lot, but not the way Comixology does it, because I like to see the full page. And also, I think that they should be charging less for digital. You know, it doesn't make sense that it costs the same to buy a digital version as it does to buy, you know, a physical copy. I mean, as an artist, I'm like, great, you know, that's awesome, because we need to be getting more money for our labor. But at the same time, you know, as a consumer, that doesn't make much sense. So, you know, it's kind of weird, a weird situation. But the whole point with that is we have to adapt to change. And, you know, I'm trying to think of how I was linking that to the money thing, though. But, so I guess I'll just jump back to the money thing, because I forget how I connected it. I'm sure I'll remember. But, yeah, I mean, bear with me. Sorry, this is, you know, again, with the time limitations and stuff, I think it's better to get a podcast out of this quality than not get anything out at all. And I think people do somewhat enjoy it, you know. So it's, you know, and plus it helps me to understand, you know, what I'm thinking a little better. It helps me to kind of sort through some of that stuff. So like I said, bear with me. Hopefully you guys get something out of these things and enjoy it. But yeah, I mean, this whole idea from that book, War of Art, that, you know, money is kind of a strategy. You know, please, if there's one thing us as artists need to learn, is to be better at business. There's a lot of things we need to learn. But one thing that's big is, money isn't a bad thing, you know? And wanting to get money for what you do is not a bad thing. It just isn't. It's normal. It's as normal as anything. It's, I don't know, it's as pure as anything. It's just, it can be, you know, done in a way that is not, you know, perceived as well as good. You know, you don't have to sell your comic book like a, you know, a car salesman, you know, maybe, and I should say a sleazy car salesman, because not all car salesmen are sleazy. We put so much negative stuff on, you know, businesses and corporations and things, and And in some cases it is justified, but there's huge generalizations about corporations and things, and I feel ya. I do not like and do not want to support Disney for freaking, you know, supposedly being a company that makes things for kids and is all about kids and family, yet, you know, supports or gets their stuff made by kids in sweatshops in other countries and maybe even in this country. I don't know. I know there's like, there's certain companies that, you know, outside they just look like a normal manufacturing company, but inside it's all, you know, people from China or something, and they run it just like the American government didn't matter. They run it the way the Chinese government works, but they do it kind of secretly, and they have to sign these things, the people have to sign these things that they won't say anything and whatnot. So there's some creepy stuff that goes on, and I don't support that. That stuff is bad, you know? And there is a lot of greed that fuels that kind of stuff. But I don't think it's fair to put that on every corporation, saying that every corporation is doing that, I think there are good corporations. And maybe there's, even in those, maybe there's some instances of things that happen that are wrong, but you know, we tend to, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater, and I think we need to be fair and take every case as its own thing, you know, instead of these blanket things on corporations and stuff. But not to be too crazy on the political side, I just think we should be fair though with everything, you know. Just because one thing is right and one thing is wrong doesn't mean we have to throw blanket statements and be unfair to people and slander people, you know. Let's pinpoint stuff. We're smart enough, you know, to surgically figure this stuff out instead of freaking, you know, making everybody suffer because one person does something wrong type of thing. Because that happens in so many instances. But, you know, I digress. That term is so weird to me. It's like, kind of feels weird to me. But, yeah, I'm off on a tangent. And I can't get back. But yeah, I think it's wrong. It doesn't make sense to label money as evil or label it as the enemy or anything like that. It's a tool that can be used for good or evil, in my opinion. And I think there's nothing wrong with getting large profits from something you make. Even sometimes stuff that doesn't seem 100% fair because, you know, it's all a perception. Is it fair that, say, I make a mini comic or whatever? I mean, this is probably would never happen, but, you know, I make a mini comic and, I don't know, sell it for $10. Well, it's just because I made it at Staples for like 25 cents per copy, that doesn't mean it's unfair to sell it for 10 bucks. If people will pay for that and want it that bad, you know, that the value is there, the perceived value. It makes people that happy to, they're like, I'm so happy, I want to buy it for $10. I mean, a lot of this stuff is super relative. I mean, why, it doesn't make sense that, you know, you spend all this time developing, writing, creating, drawing, creating characters, learning how to draw good enough to make a full comic with many pages, you know, 26 pages or something, putting all that production and effort into it, and then going and selling it for $5 or even, you know, obviously they used to be sold for like 20 cents, you know, back in the days. But even then, that was crazy. And, you know, now a lot of times they go for like $3 to $5, you know. But then, you know, you can sell a print that's just one drawing, usually much simpler than a comic page. And you can sell that for 15, 20, even and more dollars, you know? It's not, it has nothing to do with what's fair, like, you know, it has nothing to do with how much it cost or took to make the product. It only has to do with perceived value. I mean, if you can make a case that all this comic stuff means nothing, you know? I mean, I don't believe that, but, you know, it's just paper. It's just stories. There's a million stories out, and they've been put out there ad nauseum, you know? Everything's been done, you know? I don't know. You know, it's wasting trees, you know? You can make a case for comics are worth nothing, you know? There's... But we put a value on them, you know, because they're stories that are enrich our lives, you know, and especially with the superhero genre too is really cool because it gives you something to like hope. It can give you hope, like the pure old school like superhero stuff. The idea of a superhero, it's like this is, you know, something you can aspire to be a hero in your own way, you know, that type of thing. And a lot of times they taught lessons. My storage is almost full. Let me pause it here and fix that. And I don't want this to run out. So yeah, it's all perceived value. And, you know, if we think about it, yeah, okay, I printed up at Staples, you know, this little mini comic for like 25 cents or something. But obviously it takes a lot more to make a comic. So, you know, you can justify just about any price for a comic book, I think, because it takes so much work. But comics don't sell very well, and they don't sell for much. Generally. So that's how that goes, you know. I would argue that it might be probably a lot harder to make comic books than it is to write, you know, a novel, you know. But it doesn't really matter because the value of a novel is great, you know. Imagine, you know, it look at what the novels can do that no other medium can do, you know. They can go into crazy descriptions and it causes you to imagine things and you get to use the power of your imagination more because you don't have the images right there, you know. At the same time, comics do some really cool things visually that no other medium can do, you know. So they all have their own unique value. So the dollar amount doesn't really matter. And we need to be okay with making a lot of money, as much as we can possibly make, you know, as long as it's fair, as long as it makes sense, and as long as the audience, you know, perceives that value there, then I feel like it's justified, you know. People aren't going to pay for something they don't value, whether it makes sense or not, you know. You know, people will spend a lot more money on things that they want than things that they need. It's just, you know, it is what it is. People don't want to spend a lot on what they need. They don't want to have to deal with what they need at all, if at all possible. They buy things. In fact, that's why the convenience market is so prevalent, you know. If you can make something more convenient where they don't have to think about their needs so much, I mean, why do, you know, car, you know, repair places make, you know, charge so much per hour and, you know, they charge great profits, you know, for stuff that if you did it yourself, it would cost maybe a quarter of what they're, you know, paying. But the thing is they have the expertise. You know, they're more likely going to get it done right than me personally because I don't know much about cars. It's kind of worth it to pay the extra price, you know. I personally don't have the luxury to have the money to do it though, unfortunately. So I do try to do some of the stuff myself. but sometimes I do have to bring the car in, and unfortunately you have to pay a lot of money, and it sucks. But, you know, there's a lot of value there. Like, I value somebody being able to fix my car that makes me be able to go to work a lot. So they're going to get the money, you know? I have to do what I have to do. So, I don't think we should feel bad about money. We need to kill some of these stigmas, you know? There's tendency for artists to be, you know, supposedly pure from that kind of thing. I think it's false, you know? And the thing is that this, you know, this War of Art book brought about was that when we're focusing on just the art, we're still an amateur, basically, because, like I said, you can kind of tell, you know, our souls are too tied to what we are creating, and it causes resistance. That's the big thing they talk about in this book, is there's so much resistance from so many different things that cause us to not actually make the thing and put it out, that we get paralyzed and never put that stuff out. And, you know, we need to try to do things to alleviate that resistance and to push through that resistance. And a lot of times one of the things they talk about is just sitting down and doing it. And every single day, just do it. Like, if you are a freelance artist, don't try to wait for the muse or anything, you know. Sit down and start drawing, you know. Whatever it takes to get you to sit in that chair and start drawing. Who cares if you don't like it? Well, you will get into it. It won't be long before you start to get into it, because you do, in fact, love doing it, you know? So even in that one day, you know, it probably will be a half an hour at the most before you start being like, I'm into this, I'm focused. You know, I'm glad I sat down, because that was the hard part. But, you know, he says you can learn things from the job, you know, like having these mundane jobs. You know, when we have these mundane jobs, like I've always had, you know, personally, or what, you know, some of us have more exciting jobs, who knows, but a lot of us are not doing our art for a living, and, you know, we have at least a part-time job or something. You know, we go in at the time we're supposed to go in, you know, some people are late, whatever, but we go in, if we want to keep our job, we go in on time. We're not inspired to do what we're doing, but we just do it because we do what the boss tells us to do, and we get stuff done. And we get different results, but we don't necessarily care how the results go. We may or may not. It depends on how involved we are with the job. If you're doing some stuff that's just straight up manual labor, you probably don't think too much about, you know, the bottom line or the final goal, because you're just focused on doing the one task that you have been, you know, hired to do or whatever. So, you know, but you sit down, you make something, you do whatever it is you do, or you stand up, whatever, you go to work and you do it, you push through no matter what you feel in the morning. You just do it because you have to, and, you know, you get a paycheck. And he's talking about, you know, we have to kind of do the same thing with the art. It doesn't really, we got to stop being so attached to being an amazing artist or creating the great, you know, graphic novel, the great novel, whatever it is that we're making, and just realize we are what we are. I am an artist, I am a writer, and just sit down and do it whether you want to or not, and the muse will come. There's the famous saying by a few different people. I heard it from Stephen King, but I think he got it from someone else. Is, you know, somebody asked him, you know, when, you know, do you get inspired a lot, or when do you get inspired or whatever? And he says, yeah, I always wait for inspiration or whatever. And it always comes at 9 o'clock in the morning every day. Like, whatever time he gets up and sits down at the typewriter or the computer or whatever and starts typing away. And it's true, because once you start doing it, the act of doing it will start to cause the, it's like the synapse, you know, it'll cause these things to start to, you know, connect and work and spark. And the inspiration will come. It just, if you're geared that way, it's going to come. I've experienced this myself, you know. And not quite in that manner, because, you know, I don't have time to sit down at 9 o'clock in the morning and do these things. But I do notice if I just commit myself to drawing for like 5 or 10 minutes, all of a sudden I'll start to get the ideas and I'll start to get on a path where I'm like making something really cool. But if I just wait for the inspiration, I might not draw for months at a time sometimes, like, or weeks now, because I've gotten better at it. But, you know, it used to be long periods of time when I draw, because I'd always be waiting for some kind of inspiration, I guess. Or my thing is, I've been distracted, you know. My problem, I need to find a good book on helping me focus. That's my problem. That's my biggest problem. But, you know, like, when it comes to hip-hop, like writing lyrics, like, I love when people ask me to do that, like a collaboration or something, because I know I can just bang it out, like, real quick. All I gotta do is just start. Like, it's just probably the best skill I have. Like, even the little intro that I did, you know, I was like, you know, it would be kind of cool to throw, like, a little 4-bar verse in here or whatever. So I made that thing so quick. Once I had the beat, like, and the program loaded and everything, it was only, like, 5 minutes, because I wrote it real quick, a couple minutes or whatever, and I literally, like, wrote it in my phone, you know, turned on the mic or whatever, and recorded it. And I've had a lot of practice recording, too, so it only took one take. You know, it doesn't always go that well. Some verses are harder to do than others and whatnot, but, you know, I didn't have to wait for the inspiration. I didn't necessarily have inspiration, but I was just like, I just put my brain to it for a couple minutes, and bam, the words just came. You know, it just happens, because I've done it so many times. And it's not like that with my art as much, because I haven't practiced as much. You know, I haven't put in my 1,000 hours maybe yet or something. I don't know. Or 10,000 hours, or however long they say. I need to put in more hours. I definitely need to, especially seeing, like I said, I'm comparing myself to these artists at the Comic-Con, and, you know, I need to make some large strides fairly quick if I want to get anything to where I really would like, you know, to the level I'd really like to get to. But, you know, like I said, that's going to happen, because I'm pushing forward, you know, and I'm making these comics, and I'm dedicated to that, so, you know, things are going to get better. I've seen progress in artists. Ryan Wheaton's a great example. Like, I already loved his art from the get-go, but, I mean, the stuff he's doing now is, it's phenomenal. Like, you can see that because he's had these illustration jobs, and because he draws like a machine, like, he puts out like 3 or 4 drawings a day online, maybe more, I don't know, and he probably doesn't even show everything that he draws, most likely not, because I know I don't show everything I draw. Show a lot of it, though, because I'm a fiend for social media, but, you know, and you can see the progress. I mean, it's just obvious, like, he knows how to do things way better, you know, and his structure on different things has become better, and just his ability to, like, put out a nice illustration that, like, is nice and crisp. It's amazing. It's so awesome to see his progress. And like I said, I liked his art from the get-go. Like, I'm not saying he wasn't good before, but you can just tell, you know, and he's been working hard at it. That's his thing. You know, that's what separates people. Those who work hard at it and those who wish they were working hard at it, you know. And I'm probably more close. I'm trying to work hard at it. I'm, like, right in the middle. I'm trying to work hard at it, but sometimes I'm the wisher, you know, unfortunately. So that's what I'm trying to press on towards, though, you know? And like I said, you know, this kind of revolutionized my thought, you know. Maybe it's good to focus on the money, sort of. I mean, or focus on being professional. And the presentation and just working, you know, and not on the product or the end product as much. I mean, that's obviously there, but you're going to focus on that whether you want to or not. And also not focusing on being the best artist ever or making the great graphic novel or whatever, but just putting the work out and keep, and when you get done with the one you're working on, start right away on the next one. You know, just keeps making stuff. I mean, look at Stephen King. He's made some amazing stuff, but he also, I'm pretty sure he writes, like, every day, because, I mean, he's got TV show, like, multiple TV shows, multiple movies. I mean, there's so many things that come out that are by him that you don't even know are by him, because he's just so prolific, and he's been so prolific for so long, you know. Like, there's a show I'm watching now, or we've been watching recently, it's called Haven. It's kind of this, like, goofy sci-fi-ish type of, maybe not sci-fi, but more like, you know, superhero type, like, people have powers and stuff, and it's just kind of goofy. It's a little bit goofy, though, but it's fun, and it's definitely family-friendly. But if you don't pay attention to stuff, you wouldn't know this is written by Stephen King. Or it's based off of one of his writings. Like, he's so prolific, and not everything he does is genius. My favorite movie is Shawshank Redemption. And a lot of people don't even know that that's from one of his short stories. But I read the short story. It's not that good. All it is the character Red. It's his letters back home talking about this guy who he knew who escaped or whatever. That's what it is. And the way it's written in that format. And compared, like, it doesn't really tell the story like the movie does. The movie really takes the juices from it and, like, you know, makes, you know, puts, takes it for all it's worth and kind of makes it a really compelling and moving, you know, movie. And I love that movie. It's such a cool story. I mean, I haven't watched it in a while, but I used to watch it all the time, and I should go back and watch it again. But it's like one of those things that, I mean, I could retell the whole movie just in my brain right now, you know, because I've seen it so many times. But you know, it's amazing. But that wasn't his best work. I've read other things he's done that I've thought were amazing. You know, Misery was an amazing book and a good movie, too. The book was better than the movie, though, I think. And what was really cool about Misery was the way his descriptions, that, like, he describes things so, like, detailed that when I watched the movie, like, they really took straight from the book, because exactly how I, almost to the T, even to how the characters looked and to the environment, everything, the way the movie looks is exactly, almost exactly what I imagined when I was reading the book before the movie came out, you know. And it's just like, wow. That's the genius of Stephen King. That's, you know, he's known for that, you know, and a few other things that are, he always has supernatural elements. And you know, he also was obviously known as kind of a horror writer, but he's more of a supernatural writer with horror elements. You can't really, if you really break it down, you can't really peg him into one genre necessarily. But, you know, he's mostly been pegged as kind of a horror writer for, you know, Pet Sematary and It and Misery and things like that. Carrie, you know, man, he's got such a long, prolific career. Amazing. I mean, and he's super mainstream, but he's an artist's artist. He's a writer's writer, I think. I personally believe. And I think, you know, he's a pretty cool example to look at. So, yeah. Being a professional, letting money be what it is in its pure form and not, you know, it's not a bad thing. And, you know, almost using that as a strategy to break yourself free from the gravity of your own creation. You know, it's more selfless that way. You know, you learn how to create for other people. I'm not very good at that yet. I'm not good at creating for other people. And maybe I'm just not going to be that person who can be an illustrator, because I just don't get motivated unless it's something I'm, like, making myself for some reason. I have a hard time with that. Maybe I have to grow in that area. But the point is being, even with that, you know, being more selfless and less selfish, you know, I guess. You know, and it's not just pure selfishness. It's also just, you can't help it as an artist to be like so intimately connected to your work that every little critique against your work feels like they're stabbing you personally. You can't take it personal, you know, and becoming more of a professional, focusing on the business side of things a little more will help you to separate yourself from your work. You know, maybe it's not a good idea to do the one most passionate thing you thought you wanted to do. I mean, some people recommend to do that because you're going to be spending a lot of time doing something you don't like if you don't. But I think there's a middle ground. This Mecca story that I'm really excited about isn't one of those things that, you know, I would normally even go to. But the story kind of came about. It's been kind of light and fluffy and easy. But it's hard for me to do the glyph story, you know, because that's kind of more close to me. And I want it to be right type of thing. And it's been something I've thought, it's the thing I've thought about since I was a kid type of thing. And, you know, maybe it's a better idea for me to distance myself away from that and, you know, do this other story that's not as precious to me, but still awesome and exciting, you know. So, and the business side of it, you know, I have ideas for how I want to market it, and that might be part of the driving force of, you know, just getting the product out is the driving force instead of, you know, making a masterpiece. I think there's something in there that's good to at least think about, and hopefully maybe it'll help you guys, you know, and help me too. I need to learn the same thing. So, yeah, that's basically it, you know. I'm coming to the end here, and that's all I really wanted to say. This book is really awesome. I'll put all the links in the show notes, so you can check it out. Check out that app, and all the awesome stuff. And, you know, just keep making stuff. And, you know, thank you for listening. You guys are awesome. Feel free to come to the website, Donkey Jaw Projects, leave a comment. My Patreon's up. Feel free to go support me in that way. Throw a couple bucks my way a month or something. That would be awesome. Very helpful. Or go to iTunes and leave a rating, star rating. But mostly just listen to the show. Thank you for listening. You guys are awesome. And I can't wait to connect more with you guys. And I will talk to you on the next Escape Artist Podcast.
Background music provided by Mr. Poole. You can find show notes at donkeyjawprojects.com, where you can also sign up for the newsletter. If you'd like to support, go to patreon.com/plex or go to iTunes and leave a review. And thank you so much for listening. Now get your butt out there and make some awesome stuff. It's Escape Artist.